Hello, I'm Kara Kinsler, and you're listening to Inside IASB, the podcast series that explores leadership and education topics as they relate to school board responsibilities. The Illinois Association of School Boards, IASB for short, invite guests from Illinois public school districts to offer insight about current and best practices. In this series, IASB Field Services Director Dee Molinari and I explore a set of guiding principles that describe the fundamental duties of board service for close to 6,000 school board member volunteers elected or appointed to oversee their public schools. The Illinois Association of School Boards, which serves nearly 850 boards of education, call these the foundational principles of effective governance. We will unpack each of the six principles to help listeners understand what they mean, their significance in the oversight role of the school board, and how they are actually put to work in a functioning school board. Dee, in our last episode, we dug into the first foundational principle of effective governance, which was the board clarifies the district purpose. We learned how a board defines what it is they want and how those priorities are carried through in the organization. So now let's look at how a board knows that is what it wants. And this is foundational principle two, the board connects with the community. This foundational principle states that the board engages in an ongoing two-way conversation with the entire community. This conversation enables the board to hear and understand the community's educational aspirations and desires, to serve effectively as an advocate for district improvement, and to inform the community of district's performance. Dee, you and I talked with Community High School District 230 in Orland Park. Their superintendent is Robert Noltein, and board president is Anthony Saratori. So we talked to them about this foundational principle, and we'll share portions of that interview in a few minutes. Many districts do public relations work. Community engagement or public engagement involves more than just that. It's the two-way process that creates an exchange of knowledge, engaging community stakeholders in meaningful dialogue and ensuring that all voices are represented isn't easy. Dee, can you explain what is meant by two-way conversation? And can you share some examples of typical methods as well as some more creative ones you've heard about or seen?
Sure. The two-way conversation requires engaging the community, not simply pushing information out to the community. That's one way. I love to see a district embark on a robust goal setting or strategic planning process. This entails bringing stakeholders into the conversation of what they expect out of their public school. Who are those stakeholders? Your community members, parents and non-member staff, administration, students, community leaders, religious leaders, and be intentional to seek out those voices who may not be represented. You may need to be aggressive in your pursuit of those voices. You want to have collaboration and dialogue, enabling the board to hear and understand the community's educational aspirations and desires, those ends that we spoke about in foundational principle number one. This planning process is a great way to bring trust and support among all stakeholders. It also becomes a district's plot of the story to share with the community. The district will inform the community of the district's performance towards those ends.
From our interview, President Saratori explains why input from all community members matters and shares some of their tactics to involve community members. Superintendent Noltein also shares examples and talks about the use of technology platforms used to help reach those community members.
We want all members of our community, and that includes both those who have children in our schools, those who will have children in our schools or have had children in our schools, and those who never had children in our schools, but they're all part of our community because they pay taxes into our district and they have a right to say what they believe in and participate in what goes on in the community. So really everybody who lives within this district, we consider as part of our community. We have three board committees, one for building and finance, one for education, and one for student services. And on those committees are three members, community members from each of our three schools. So each committee has nine community members that are part of that committee, and they spend 2 years on that committee. They not only get to listen to what's going on in the district, but we want to hear from them as far as, you know, their thoughts, their ideas, do they agree, do they disagree? To us, that's a big part of the input that we get. And a lot of the input we get is very good, and we use it going forward. Not everybody on those committees, community members, has children in the district. So that is also another good thing for us. We do other things. We have done a lot of videos that we try to put out to the community. We've had newsletters that go out to the community. We have a community connection that we do every other year with all the political representatives of our community, including all the village mayors, the fire department, the police department, and we bring our students in and we explain to them what we do at each of our schools. We give them a background on the schools and we give them an opportunity to ask us questions and hear exactly what's going on. So there's a lot of different things we try to do to connect with the community and also provide them with information on what, not only what we do, but also what's going on in the district.
To the best that we can, we do ask the buildings to also engage within their local communities as a separate entity. So, for example, our Andrew team are members of the local Tinley Park Chamber of Commerce. You know, we have members that are part of the Orland Park. So community membership is also part of it. But a lot of that happens at the building level because they're a little bit more intimately involved in the community. But that helps create those relationships that are important, whether it's with the library district, whether again it's with police or fire or their chambers of commerce, rotaries, things of that nature. One of the things that we shifted to in the particular in the past 6 months was using platforms of communication that actually provide us analytics. So SMORE is a newsletter format, but anytime somebody opens that document that we've pushed out, whether it's about a reopening plan, whether it's about, you know, what happened at the last board meeting, we could actually track that now to see how many people went into that document live. So that really has helped us determine, you know, when we send out I sent out a Friday newsletter, you know, 12,000 people open and access that newsletter. That's good information for us to move forward. And to Tony's point, we did push a lot of our video. A lot of our celebrations, a lot of our accomplishments, student recognitions through the video platform, which is pushed out on social media, which provides us analytics as well. So we want to put numbers to them the best we can, just so that we can provide community. Like when we sent out a reopening plan, we had 23,000 people who accessed a document. Because you push out an email, sometimes you don't know if anybody opened it, right? And then this provides us that information and the board could see.
It's important for the board to not simply hear from the community, but to listen to understand. Effective community engagement, such as strategic planning or ongoing community focus groups, is necessary for school boards to determine how resources are to be used. Here is what President Ceratori and Superintendent Nolting had to say about making their community a part of the conversation.
It's so important as a board that you try to figure out ways to not only get your community involved, but make your community feel like they're part of your schools, group of individuals to help develop that mission and vision. And it was students, it was teachers, it was staff members, it was community members. And so we want our community members to feel like they're part of this district too. It's not just students, teachers, and staff. It's also community. And so we try to do everything possible to make them part of it. And I think that's what's really important, is to make them feel that they're not only part of the district, but we want to hear their input and we appreciate it.
There's some pretty robust, it's not just simply the old school surveys, you know, Likert scale kind of surveys. They have a lot of platforms now that you could really get people more engaged in the process. And I'd encourage school districts to consider those mechanisms too, because, you know, we had one that was the brand was called Thought Exchange, and it was a survey, but it really relied upon individuals to be able to not only provide narrative input to the district, but also to kind of interact with others' ideas or thoughts about a certain topic. so that you really got down to a lot more dialogue that people felt like they had, and we really received from the feedback. But those are just great opportunities. You know, we're reviewing a dress code, and I know that seems like dress code's a big deal because parents, community, everybody has an opinion on what's appropriate or what's within a safety. So getting those things out there so that everybody has an opportunity to give you feedback has been really helpful. And I think for a long time, schools have been a little bit cautious of inviting that feedback because either they want to make the decision or they don't want to. But I think our board and many of our leaders have been open to the fact that if we're a community high school and we're going to do things despite our community's input or thoughts, then we're not a community high school.
One would hope that successful community engagement also means that the community has a better understanding of what the board does, their role in making decisions versus what are decisions and duties carried out by the superintendent and other staff. President Ceratori shared his thoughts with us on this.
I think that in reality, most people do not understand what the board does, what impact the board has. I think most people, first of all, believe that the members of the board is like some political group that runs for election and gets paid for what we do. And they have something to do with what goes on in the schools, but what exactly we do, I don't think most people know. And I think the understanding of that has become much clearer during this COVID situation, because we unfortunately have had more people coming to our meetings than ever in the past. And by what people say and what they think we should be doing, it becomes very clear that they don't really understand what we do or why we are there. We really have had very few people that will come to a board meeting and bring up issues that they don't have, that the board doesn't have anything that they're able to handle or do anything about. Obviously, if we get emails that relate to any of those issues, those will be responded to, and we'll try to direct those individuals to where they should go or who the proper person is to talk to. I have had individuals in the community contact me about certain situations, and I'll tell them up front that that's not really a board issue, but here's the person you can contact. So to me, the main focus that we try to do as a board, and it's not only myself, it's if other members also were to be contacted by somebody, especially the members who have children in the school, which I don't. It's important that, you know, they understand that there's issues that are really not the responsibility of the board. So if we can point them to someone in administration or at the individual building that they can contact, we'll do that. So then, you know, they can get the help they need and understand that that's really not a board function.
Dee, you call this the COC or chain of command. Can you describe the appropriate chain of command for customer concerns that are not the responsibility of school boards?
Yes, let's clarify customer concerns. Customer concerns are those concerns such as, I don't like my child's lunchtime. My child only has recess one time a week. These concerns are considered customer concerns and need to be directed to the district. As a board member, you thank them, the customer, for sharing their concern with you, and then you direct them to the person best suited to solve the concern for them. Perhaps it's a teacher, the principal. The chain of command may vary depending on the district, but it certainly is not the responsibility of a board member. Depending on your board's protocols, then, you'd also want to give the superintendent a heads up when you hear those customer concerns to abide by the protocol of no surprises. One district I've worked with had board member business cards printed up with the chain of command on the back of the card to remind them this is the appropriate way to handle those customer concerns.
Thank you, Dee. That's a helpful explanation. We hope you enjoyed this second episode, and we'd like to thank Superintendent Robert Nolteen and Board President Anthony Ceratori with Community High School District 230 for sharing your district examples. Please join us next time for a discussion on IASB Foundational Principle 3, The Board Employs a Superintendent. You'll hear from representatives from Community Unit School District 300. All of this and more on the next episode of Inside IASB. Thanks for listening. Please share and follow Inside IASB podcast episodes available at www.iasb.com/podcast. We welcome listener feedback.